U.S. Military Assistance Agreement, which established continued U.S. control over, in a sense, local control over the armed forces of the Philippines through the Joint U.S. Military Advisory Group, or JUSMAG, which advises and trains the Philippine Army and lends or sells arms as well as other equipment to the military. And this came right after independence, on top of other agreements such as the Agreement of General Relations, which gave, well, at the time, gave U.S. the right to remain in control of U.S. military bases in the Philippines, as well as guaranteed that the U.S. corporations and citizens could further continue to own the property and expand their investments, and also brought the foreign policy of the Philippines pretty much under the dictates of the U.S. government at the time.
And is this part of American policy during the Cold War in Southeast Asia?
Right, but in the sense of the Cold War of ensuring that these territories are still in control of America, it also ensured that a lot of the land and a lot of the bases as well as resources would be under the dictates of the U.S. government during the Cold War.
That was Kenneth Crabilia with the Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. I'm Alan Montecelio with KBOO News.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Doug McVeigh, Robin Ryan, Catherine Maticek, Sam Bowman, and Nathan Bohensky. The producer is Alan Montecelio. Special thanks to laborradio.org. Our engineer is Sequinia Wright. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Sari Gametha.
And I'm Doug McVeigh. Tune in tonight at 10 p.m. as several KBOO programmers join forces for an audio collage special. Join Radio Lost and Found, Dr. Zomb, King Fader, No Soap Radio, and The Outside World as they come together to pay a sonic tribute to the late Don Joyce of Negative Land. Tonight, from 10 p.m. till midnight, right here on Community Radio KBOO. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Positively Revolting, guest host Lisa Loving speaks with local artist and activist Simon Tam of the band The Slants about cultural appropriation and trademark law. At 9, on One Land, Many Voices, hosts Maxine Fuchs and Mohammed speak with Palestinian journalist Mohammed Omer about the Gaza War 1 year later. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on the Radio Zine, Seattle-based scientist Paul Stamets speaks about mushrooms, bees, and saving the world. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now stay tuned. Coming up next is a KBOO News in-depth report.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
President Obama is scheduled to go to Kenya today. After visiting Kenya, he plans to go to Ethiopia to address the 6th Global Entrepreneurship Summit. This will make him the first U.S. president to visit Ethiopia. But the president skipped a conference this week in Ethiopia on financing for development. The U.S. representative to that conference blocked an initiative by developing countries and non-governmental organizations to reform global tax rules in order to stop tax dodging by multinational corporations. For more, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Aldo Caliara with the Center for Concern, who attended the summit in Addis Ababa this week.
As the president prepares for his trip to Africa, this is in the midst of a financing for development conference that just took place that had a so-called action agenda. Could you talk a little bit about that action agenda and what it actually means?
Yes, this was a name given to the outcome of the conference. We very much disagreed with the name because in reality, if you go through the commitments in the conference, we call it an inaction agenda. There is not so much that is actionable there, and we actually saw during the negotiations leading up to that conference a purposeful effort by several countries, and the U.S. was one of them, to actually deprive the conference of any meaningful outcome. This is a conference that could have looked at issues like, for example, how to unlock money that countries lose year after year for reasons of tax evasion, for example, how they could actually use that money for recover that money and use it for development purposes, issues of financing universal access to services, issues on debt restructuring, sovereign debt restructuring, so countries could also engage in more responsible lending and borrowing practices. So a number of ways in which countries could finance development that could have been materialized in that conference, and the conference, the commitments really didn't, they really lost this opportunity. So we you know, this, it's kind of ironic to call it an action agenda.
And we're talking about some of the poorest countries in the world, and yet some of the most resource-rich countries. Is part of the problem that multinational corporations are coming in and able to get away with the resources of these countries to extract them almost tax-free?
Yes, that is pretty much at the center of the issue of international rules for taxation. What the proposal that we were promoting and many other groups around the world were promoting were to be able to stop the activity of multinational companies, that they are able to play across many jurisdictions and optimize their tax bill. But when they optimize their tax bill, they do it at the expense of particular jurisdictions where they end up not paying taxes. So, and it is not like they don't pay taxes. They are to pay taxes in the U.S. or in some country in Europe. They just manage to be able to not pay taxes anywhere. And we have seen many of those examples, as you will be aware, with Apple and Microsoft and Starbucks and several other companies. Rio Tinto and so on and so forth. So these are the sort of practices that deprive countries of the resources they need to pay for their development. And these are the tax rules in place, the rules for international tax cooperation. The system of how to design and agree on those rules is a broken system. We were pushing for some new forum to develop those rules. And this is the sort of movement that countries like the U.S. opposed. And we believe that behind that opposition, the strong lobbying power of these multinationals, that's what's behind this opposition.
And the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon praised the final result of this Addis Ababa meeting and said that this gives the foundation for a revitalized global partnership for sustainable development that will leave no one behind. What does he mean by sustainable development? Is that actually happening with this new agenda?
We would say that, unfortunately, the conference has failed to lay those foundations for a new agenda on sustainable development. We hoped that the conference was going to do that. There was a lot of rhetoric leading up to the conference saying, in September governments are going to meet and they are going to agree to launch a set of very ambitious goals on sustainable development, sustainable development goals. And so this conference was supposed to pave the way for that other meeting in September to say, okay, here are the strong means of implementation for how to reach those goals. And then we are going to agree on the goals. But now that the means of implementation are so weak, we believe that this whole agenda may end up being a house of cards, because it's not going to have any real basis for on which to implement it. So the Secretary General, it is his job to praise the outcome, whichever outcome that was going to be. But in this case, the outcome of this conference does not offer the foundations for financing the sustainable development that we were hoping for.
And I was just reading that developing countries lose an estimated $212 billion every year to tax dodging by multinational companies. What would that mean for those countries if that tax money were actually returned to them?
Well, it would mean money for financing essential infrastructure that they need, electricity, transportation. It would also mean being able to finance hospitals, schools, education for children, health, access to health services, especially for women. It would mean a lot of things that in the developed world, are sometimes taken for granted, but in many of these countries are just a distant dream. And by the way, $212 billion is probably at the lower end of the, it's actually a conservative estimate. It's some of the estimates calculate it's almost a trillion that developing countries lose every year for due to these different maneuverings to avoid taxes.
And just back to President Obama, what kind of a message do you think he's sending to the African countries by coming this week to a meeting on entrepreneurship while skipping out on the Finance Group for Development Conference and instead sending a representative from the U.S. that actually blocked any changes to the tax code that would have brought in the needed revenue to Africa?
In fact, the host country, Ethiopia, during the conference, the reason that the President Obama is planning to come a couple of weeks afterwards to the country, the country was actually under strong pressure as a host country, and it is reportedly one of the countries that asked several of the other attendees to the conference to let go of further demands and just agree the document as it was. Developing countries in the conference wanted to actually negotiate and continue pushing for a more ambitious outcome. And in addition to the U.S., you have Ethiopia as the host country putting pressure on them to say, please, I am as a host, I don't want to be embarrassed, and I don't want to create an embarrassment also for some of the other guests. Please take this deal so we can make, save face and say the conference has succeeded, because as a host country, it's always very difficult if the conference you are holding is it fails, it creates a problem for you, right? And I believe that unfortunately, even the fact that President Obama is going there 2 weeks later must have been one of the factors why Ethiopia was also under heavy pressure to try to get everybody to agree to an outcome, even as unsatisfactory as it was, no? And some, the developing countries, in fact, at the end of the conference, the block of the developing countries, you may know that these are 134 countries in the UN. So 134 of the 193 members. All of these countries, all of the 134 filed a statement at the end of the conference registering their dissatisfaction with the outcome, saying that the outcome did not accommodate several of the concerns they had, even though they accepted the outcome, you know, but they registered, which is a very, it's not something that happens often, you know, that you have a bloc of 134 countries in a unanimous way registering displeasure with the outcome of a conference, which is also another thing that I think, the message that you send by having pushed an outcome that all of these countries disagree with, it's very contradictory with the message, now of promoting entrepreneurship, promoting development and sustainable development, in particular in Africa.
Well, and it seems that what you're implying is that these government officials, in order to save face and to save embarrassment, actually are condemning the poorest people to increased suffering and increased inequality by the retention of these outdated tax codes.
Exactly. Yes, that is what we are saying. Unfortunately, the poor are the ones who are going to suffer the consequences, the marginalized communities, though, who will continue to not have access to the services that lost revenue could finance. They will be the ones to pay the price.
Wow. Well, we will follow President Obama's visit to Ethiopia and this unfortunate result of the International Financing for Development Conference that just took place in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. I want to thank you for joining us, Aldo Cagliari, with the Center for Concern in Washington, D.C. This is Jinka Soderberg with KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:30.